Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And I got to, as a matter of fact, before I move forward, because I forgot to bring this up with Sean, we actually do have a conversation or two before we get started recording. Welcome back, Sean. So, you might be muted. Anyway.
Good to be here, sir. Thank you.
Yes, and I know you know Jerry Winstrand, and I need, because it's really push come to shove right now, and he is right now the only candidate that has confirmed he will fully support full compliance to the Constitution. He's got a race he's running, and he's got basically an incumbent auditor at the state level who is doing, you know, tuck, duck, and hide, basically trying to not say anything to basically ruin his, you know, backstroke into, you know, the seat again, because he's banking on everybody blindly voting the Republican, because they know he's been guaranteed the nomination. Regardless of, you know, how the people feel between now and the primary, he knows he has the nomination, because the fix is in, because the party, the operatives of the party, are all behind this. Now, that doesn't mean that the majority of the grassroots members of the party want to see this happen, nor I don't think that they're really aware of the major contrast. So Jerry needs money. Now, I'm not telling people to, you know, write thousands of dollar checks, but people need, if you really want to see something actually hit the radar in 2026, between now and 2028, folks, we're going to need this, because now we'll actually have a person that will be able to go out and actually have a broader audience, because they can step right out and the news will put the microphone in their face and say, what's going on? The state auditor's out here to make a statement. And so one of the many things that he can state is he can talk about things that are happening that would fall under the auditor's hat, such elections and so forth, where he would basically be able to say, hey, this is a huge problem, folks. This is a huge problem, and place for everybody to understand the constitutional context. What we do, he'll be able to do to everybody else. In other words, it is now not just going over a radio show and entertaining or, you know, educating, you know, a very select group of people. Most of the people of the state, and as a matter of fact, what'll end up happening is the news media, because they'll try to spin this, they'll try to make them look bad, then all of a sudden they're going to realize, oh, you know what, we got to expunge this. We can't cover this type of stuff. And so there'll be certain groups that will be covering it, and that's how, because you don't get to that size and be able to just sweep everything under the rug, if you know what I mean. It's kind of like how Fox News for a long time was really an outlier. There was Newsmax, and I think there was Newsnet Daily, something like that, and the Drudge Report. There were these outlier media outlets that were actually reporting more of the truth. Maybe not all of the truth, but more of the truth. And so people were starting to get it. People were starting to break away, because things weren't adding up with the big cover-up and the narrative, the management of the narrative by the progressives. And they started seeing things, and all of a sudden, people that could actually connect dots or actually, you know, use a little common sense, logic, and reason started realizing that the fix is in our media. So bottom line, folks, there's probably no greater need than going out, and he's on my candidate endorsement page. Just go look him up, Jerry Winstrand. He is running for the state auditor in Missouri. So with that being said, please set up the, as generous as you can be, because this guy needs money to start running, you know, just to get out to be at the debates, to travel around and to spend the rest of his time between now and the primary on the road so that he can be at the different events statewide. Because the more events he goes to, the more events the actual auditor that is trying to fight for his seat will need to show up, or at least an underling will be there to say, oh, he's really busy, but he's doing great work. And this is where everybody can start seeing that you've got basically a Biden running for auditor in Missouri. The incumbent is a Biden that is basically guaranteed that seat. This is why he's running a campaign from the basement, folks. Anywho, so the only thing, and the reason I asked you to jump in here is remind me every day when we do these recordings that if I haven't endorsed Jerry and asked people to contribute, because we really need contributions going to champions of the Constitution, those people who are willing to put, you know, their everything on the line. Folks, what usually happens is those people who fight for the cause of liberty get blessed. Those who contribute to the cause receive blessings. That is the preponderance of what happens in a truly a dark, corrupt world. And we can change, because when the people allow corruption to occur, this is when evil will continually prevail. But if people actually start standing up, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, the people right now, because they allow this unconstitutional throwing money over state lines and so forth, we need to take advantage of it, because at least if we get one mouthpiece, we get one champion of the Constitution out there trumpeting the horn, you know, follow the Constitution, use the Constitution, then we actually now have a toehold. This is a foothold situation where we can start building off of this. So anyhow, I can't express how important this is. And I had a conversation with Jerry yesterday, and I told Jerry, I know I am a liability, because many of the conservative organizations, because we call them out. There's no doubt in my mind, these conservative organizations, you know who they are. They're going to basically go after, and they're probably going to attack Jerry. They're not going to attack, you know, what he's standing for, the Constitution, what he's doing. They will try to attack him personally. It's just the same way they attack me. Oh, well, that guy's out there for the money. You know, they're trying to inject personal reasons and personal arguments as to why I'm not worthy of being listened to or following or working with. And they're going to do the same thing to him. And he said, I would rather have you on my team than have, you know, those corrupt vestiges, you know, trying to, you know, attack me. I don't care if they're attacking me or not. I do not want their support. Anyway, so with that, there's not much more to do other than diving into where we've got, unless you've got to go back or something you wanted to bring up. By all means, Sean.
Well, I was hoping to bring up the fact that make people aware of what's going on in Virginia. And they probably heard a lot about all the new laws and taxes and the threat to the Second Amendment that's going on. They're a sanctuary state. They're reinforcing their sanctuary policies. The governor has made specific statements about refusing to work with ICE. And now she signed a bill, HB 965 in Virginia, which adjoins Virginia to other states. And I'm going to read straight from the press release. The Presidential Electors National Popular Vote Compact enters Virginia into an interstate compact known as the Agreement Among States to Elect the President by National Popular Vote. And Virginia agrees to award its electoral votes to the presidential ticket that receives the most popular votes in all 50 states and the District of Columbia.
In other words, disregarding the outcome of their state and who the people chose as their electors. In other words, abide by an unconstitutional pact, an unconstitutional agreement, a agreement that is formed on the basis of a democratic form of government, then the constitutional republican form of government that we're supposed to be following, where the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So I hope that what ends up happening between now and 2028, folks, I hope that enough of the states to get to 26 states agree that they're going to do that. When they have a majority of the states, they're just going to do this. Now, that doesn't mean that the Electoral College will still swing that way. But what this means is in 2028, while Trump is still president, when they actually forward out a popular vote, utilizing their votes for the popular vote instead of following the Electoral College, then this gives Trump the ability to send the DOJ out, arrest these people, and basically, you know, inform the state legislature that they better, because it's the state legislator's job, is to ensure that the electors have been chosen and that the electors actually send their votes for president and vice president. That if they actually vote contrary to whatever the process is that they have, and right now I'm not even happy about the process, because the process is equally unconstitutional, but at least it aligns with the Electoral College process, where they're actually talking about abandoning by using the popular vote. The idiot lawyer out there, he's, we've been doing this. This is just the same as we're doing. That is not true. And as a matter of fact, what we used to do until 1856, or actually between 1820s and 1856, for about 30 years, the people were able to choose their electors. In other words, we didn't vote for presidents. We did not see a president's name on the ballot. You voted for your elector, and the elector chose the president. They were the ones that ran the campaigns for the president. The people who were running for president, nobody ran for vice president, by the way. Nobody ran for vice president. Everybody was running for president, and the electors out of the pool of presidents chose which one would be the best vice president. There's no tickets either. So I'm hoping that we get enough of these states to actually do this so that we can actually clean out this. If at anything, Trump will at least do this. He should be doing this with all of the states currently that are violating it. If he actually started going after Washington and California, removing every public servant that is outright violating the Constitution by not allowing the repelling of invaders. Everybody that's standing up against ICE and all of these people out there that are protesting against executing the laws of the Union should be stripped of their citizenship. The Constitution demands that we, the citizens, are to basically not just, not support the Constitution, but we're obligated to support the Constitution. And when they actually want to interfere with the execution of the Constitution, they're directly violating their legal obligation of supporting the Constitution. We're not asking people to support the Republican Party. We're not asking people to support President Donald J. Trump. We're telling people you are obligated to support the Constitution. The Constitution dictates every invader must be repelled. Donald J. Trump isn't even doing all of what he's supposed to be doing, but at least he's partially doing it. And they're having a problem with that. And the bottom line is that Trump needs to start doing a lot more. And we could easily be talking about on the international front, the economy, and so forth and so on. I would invite everybody to go back and listen to the 13-part series that I created on what a constitutional president could do for you. Because at that point in time, we created that when Biden was in office. And that instead of electing, of the guy that's going to get us vengeance, we could actually choose to elect somebody that would take a stand and take us down and put us back on the path. The president does not have the authority to solve these problems. The state legislatures have to do this. But the president, as I told everybody in that 13-part series, the state legislatures would be protected because as the president, as a constitutional president, he would ensure that the bureaucracies, the Department of Energy, the EPA, all of these agencies are basically all pulled back where they're unconstitutional regulations and everything else that they're out there trying to enforce and stranglehold these states will be pulled back. During the 4 years of a constitutional president, they will not be enforcing unconstitutional laws, allowing the states to do their job. And the primary focus of that president would be going to every state house on a regular basis and saying, you need to be doing this. As a matter of fact, calling upon the people to ensure that their state legislatures are in an emergency session until this problem is resolved. This problem could easily be done and dealt with and resolved within that four-year period if we had that focus on it. If we had a president willing to lead on the supreme law of the land and actually fulfilling his oath of office. So enough said. Is there anything more that would help or anything else you...
See what you thought about what isn't that sedition?
Yes, it's actually there.
So it's seditious conspiracy.
It's treason
for all of these legislators in these states that have created this confederation.
Yes. Technically, it's treason. It is treason because those people who basically violated the whiskey tax. Remember the whiskey rebellion last year when we went through that. Everybody that was out there protesting against the whiskey tax, they weren't just creating laws. They were just protesting, exercising the First Amendment right to say, hey, now they weren't actually exercising. You know what? Forgive me. They were causing an insurrection because the First Amendment right of petitioning would have been done differently. And had they done that, they could have brought forward some of their arguments because I told you some of their arguments were legitimate. There was not a uniformity in the application. So the larger distilleries were getting advantages. And so they had the opportunity to actually, you know, have their these issues redressed. But the fact is they didn't want to swallow it. They felt that they could revolt and rebel. So they were actually treasonous in violating a legitimate law. And so they were out there literally violating the Constitution. And ergo, they were arrested on the charges of treason. 24 men were charged with treason. And two were convicted. The others were just stupid enough. We were just kind of going along, I guess. You know, I mean, you have guilt by association. But they at least charged and convicted two. All these other people that are actually passing laws, if you've got evidence that they voted for an unconstitutional treasonous law, you've got them. There's no defense. That person, that is their own admission that they've committed treason. It's almost like a confession. You don't even need two witnesses, as far as I'm concerned, when they've actually taken on and moved forward in basically voting for and passing a law that violates the Constitution. That is pure treason. Pure treason. Done. And we need to actually, you know, instead of a dance hall, maybe what we should have is start building gallows. I'll bet you anything before the second gallows is finished, behavior will start changing. Because if they know you're not going to enforce the law, you enable bad behavior. Most of this is our fault, folks, because we're not demanding full compliance of the law. I mean, most of it, all of it. It starts with us. It starts with Jerry getting a candidate in to take that stand. That's great I could pull that back around, huh?
Yes, sir.
So like it. So anyway, we're in the amendments to the Maryland ratification of AIDS.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yeah,
it made me think about this when you were saying that. Not only did they get charged with treason and require instant, you know, the militia to be brought out in the Whiskey Rebellion. But the fact that they were charged with treason, they pushed it that way instead of petitions like they should have, they probably did more damage to their cause than if they would have went the other way. Because now nobody wants to speak up or in that time, nobody would want to speak up against the tax because they're going to be looked at as a traitor or treasonous.
That's right.
When if they would have used the proper method, they could have gotten more support for their cause, you know, just like you talked about. And I think that goes on nowadays as well.
Yes.
Is that people are so stuck on their cause and they go out and just like you were talking about with the ICE protest, that's what they want them to do, to go out in the streets and protest because they don't want anything to change. They just want division amongst the people. So we're fighting each other instead of worrying about what they're doing that's causing the problem.
Yeah, it's so actually it's very insidious because when you're wrestling with the pig, a pig doesn't know. I mean, their motivation is just having fun. Right? They love it, you know, being out there in the slop. And if they think it's just a game, out in the slop wrestling with pigs. And, you know, it's not like, you know, you pin them down, the guy that can pin them down and have, you know, eaten enough crap. All that that's in a pigsty, right? The nasty, muddy pigsty that you're wrestling in. You know, you're getting that in your face and all over you. And you're wrestling with the pig. I mean, the pig doesn't see, you know, his demise when you pin him down. The next guy, you know, they try to do it. And it becomes this contest of wrestling with pigs. The pig enjoys that. It's almost like, you know, playing with your dog. They enjoy interfacing and interaction with humans, especially domesticated pigs. I mean, they have, and there are many people that treat them like pigs. The point is they're not out there trying to invoke a distraction. They're not trying to invoke an obviation or an obfuscation of what we really should be doing. That's what the progressives are doing. Is they're out there protesting and everything else to try to get you to go to blows with them instead of actually turning to the laws and enforcing the law. They don't want you to know how they are, because they don't even know. Because you don't know, and if there's anybody that does know, it would probably be the I'll call him the organ grinder. The guy that's actually cranking that organ, you're making all these monkeys dance, you know, to the tune. And that problem exists on both the progressive and the conservative side. Because those people that are making money from the problem do not want to see this problem go away. The courts, they have a lot vested in this. They need to maintain their control. They want to see these problems, so they keep on, you know, keeping their courts stacked with these problems. Anyway. So we got about a minute, and let's just affirm where we are with Maryland, because we need to do that at least. So, as I look at the Maryland debates, we were left off on the Ninth Amendment. We just finished reading the Ninth Amendment. The Congress shall have no power to lay a poll tax. So that's on page 4. So when we come, actually, there's time. You can read the Tenth Amendment. Let's go ahead and read that one.
And that no person conscientiously scrupulous of bearing arms in any case shall be compelled personally to serve as a soldier.
Okay. In other words, the right of a conscientious objection, you know, they have that right of conscientious objection. So here's the interesting thing. Many of the states did not allow conscientious objectors, at least carte blanche. As a matter of fact, I think when you look at the, you know, Carolina and those types of places, because they needed, if you had a conscientious objection in the slave states, you know as well as I do, they couldn't afford any conscientious objectors. So what they did was they made laws that said, if you want to conscientiously object, that's fine, but you have to pay for the salary of the person that, you know, is going to be compelled to do this work. In other words, you're going to pay for them to do it, because it makes it a lot easier for people to willingly step in and go, yeah, I'll do it for the money. That gets the poor in those, you know, those slave states to kind of do the fighting for them, if that makes sense. So,
right.
All right.
I don't know if you saw gangs in New York, but they had a little section in there about that. The rich people were paying to get out of Vietnam.
Yeah, so it's really hard to kind of hear you. Let's bring up the gangs of New York when we come back, because we're going into a break right now. So folks, we'll be right back after this short promo. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so you were just talking about, I think, the gangs of New York when the music was kind of drowning you out. So go ahead and say that again.
No, it would the backdrop of that movie, most of it was fictional, but the backdrop was factual. In 1863, they had draft riots.
Sure.
Because the people didn't want to go fight in the Civil War, and the rich people were being allowed to buy their way out of service.
Yep.
While the poor people were being conscripted.
Yes. And that federal draft, because that was not the militia. You got to remember that the militia, Lincoln disbanded the militia because they refused to fight. So he federalized, or he created, a mercenary army outside the context of the Constitution. This is something that nobody's taught this. The militias in many of the states just refused to keep and force. As a matter of fact, there were plenty of northern states that were happy to see those southern states go. They didn't like it to have to deal with the slave states anymore. They were done. Why would they want to send the militia? Lincoln's war was his attempt to initiate the war using the militia was another abject failure. Remember, I talked about Lincoln's history of failing. And as he was watching and his response, he was failing again. And he refused to allow himself to fail. He did anything and everything he possibly could, violating the law to prove that he was not a failure, or to try to make sure that he didn't go out as a true failure as the president of the United States. And look, he's been glorified as the tyrant that he was. He's been glorified as our greatest president by way too many people, But anyway, so, okay. And as a matter of fact, currently under Trump and under this new Department of Defense leadership, they're basically saying, we're going to manage. You don't even have to put your name. You don't go sign up. You're automatically put into the draft system, whether you like it or not. And the fact that the federal government is managing the draft is a direct violation of the Constitution. They have to go to the state legislatures and call forth with requisitions, give us this many people. Now, it's one thing to basically say and to have an honor the militia system based on military occupational specialties and everything else that I can understand them doing if we were maintaining the militia. But the Dick Act basically undermined the Constitution and created this facade that the federal government didn't have to follow it anymore. And everybody's happy. Now the federal government's the bad guy. Where the states actually were the ones that actually had to do what they needed to do. But here's the point. Had the states held the federal government accountable, not one U.S. citizen would have ever deployed in the name of the United States government off U.S. soil. Not one. We wouldn't have lost one life. If the states maintained, hey, hold on here, you can only federalize, you cannot go and fight a foreign war. It's one thing to utilize the Navy and the Marine Corps, you know, for whatever strategic things that you think is important, but you cannot mobilize and take our militia and deploy it overseas. Can't do it. Constitution doesn't let them. So, as we kind of look, I mean, you know, people are starting to realize, as because I take a little bit of time in social media to, you know, to basically poke people in the eye. I'm not trying to be mean, and I'm not trying to prove myself as, you know, some brilliant person. I'm only proving how, I mean, read the Constitution. When you look at what it takes to call forth the militia, you know, it doesn't take a genius to realize that executing the laws of the Union, suppressing insurrections, and repelling invasions, all three of those things, the only justifications that they have, and when we read the ratification debates, they're going to say, well, that's the only purpose that they can call forth the militia. They can't call them forth to go do a humanitarian, you know, fight against Hitler or a humanitarian fight against Idi Amin or anything anywhere. You know, ethnic cleansing. None of that was legitimate. The Constitution only allows them to federalize the army for the defense of the United States. Within the United States. It's the homeland security. And the fact that they didn't use the Navy. And you know what? How would they have used the Navy in Bosnia-Herzegovina? Because there's no port there. That's landlocked areas. It's the same thing with Afghanistan. Landlocked. What is the strategic interest that we would have in these landlocked areas at all? Oh, see, they've gotten away with killing our sons and daughters. Very few daughters, but one's too many. And my point is that they've been getting away with doing this because the states have allowed them, they've basically taken their lucre, put it in their pocket, and allowed our children to basically be killed and to allow them to brainwash us or basically indoctrinate us into how we need to act. They're going to tell us what that Constitution means. You're going to do what we tell you. That's where we are today, folks. So, let's look at 11. What is the 11th Amendment?
Number 11, that there be a responsible counsel to the president.
Now, what does that mean? Usually, so remember some of the amendments that they had, they kind of explained the justification of why they were doing that. But this really doesn't say anything, and I honestly believe that that counsel to the president would probably be with that falls within the Constitution, the chief of staff, and the executive secretaries, in other words, the Secretary of Defense, Treasury, State, those legitimate powers, as well as the joint chiefs of staff being the military heads, right? The army or the commander of the militia, which technically he's the commander, and the, you know, the chief admiral of the Navy. And so today it would just be two generals or a general and an admiral. And, you know, to you just add a third seat to get, you know, somebody else's view, they'd probably have the commandant of the Marine Corps or at least somebody from the Marine Corps in that Joint Chiefs of Staff. And that would be it. Constitutionally, that's all that he would need because his focus would only be within the purview of those things allowed under the Constitution. They wouldn't need to have somebody talk about the environment and energy strategies and policies, so forth and so on. Most all of those things, had the states actually started realizing, you know, what they could really be doing, shoot, the states would have actually been the benefactors because they would have been driving the policies. I don't know if that makes sense, but when you look at energy, if the state legislatures never just allowed them to, you know, run roughshod over them, they'd say, hey, you're going to follow what we want on the energy policies. This is what we're going to allow in our states. So you need to basically conform to what we're allowing, not what you want, because you want to basically sell us downriver because, you know, these deals you're making with the international community are literally, you know, more advantageous for you and your friends instead of us who you're supposed to support. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, why didn't the states wake up? I guess money in hand is like
paid off to not wake up.
Yeah, so I think the money
in hand.
Right. So there's a saying, right? A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And I think that they looked at the money in hand was that bird in hand instead of two in the bush. When actually the money or the bird they had in the hand that was much greater currency was the power that they possessed.
Right.
Interesting. Okay, so 12.
Number 12, that there be no national religion established by law, but that all persons be equally entitled to protection in their religious liberty.
Okay. So they wanted to make sure that the federal government could not step in and start unifying, because I've said this before, that when you really look at the numbers and the states that had the agrarian, or not the agrarian, the Anglican Church, New York, Virginia, and I could look up the list again. There were five states that, you know, had the Anglican Church, the Church of England, as the state-sponsored church. They were the big ones. They could have easily started because the numbers were in their favor. If you actually started creating an isolation of doctrines and so forth, it wouldn't. So. What ends up happening when people start getting engaged in a religious war, they usually aren't willing to adjoin with others until their back is against the wall. And what I mean by that is when you look at the Congressionals, the Baptists, or whatever, the different faiths that were out there, instead of just the Anglican, there were like two or three other faiths that were considered state-sponsored churches. And so they would have been divided and conquered because that's the way it's done. I mean, everybody understands dividing and conquering so that they would go after the least threat, like the Congressionalists. Let's say the Congressionalists had the lowest numbers. They would knock them off so that those states would become Anglican because it would be pretty easy to do that. And so eventually what would have ended up happening was the dividing and conquering, they would have centralized and would have been able to create a theocracy. And interestingly enough, the only reason why nobody had the desire to do it was because it was the Anglican Church. You know why?
Because they came from a theocracy?
Well, yeah, but they hated that theocracy. They just fought a war against it, and they said, we're not going to have that. And so it was, I believe when you really look at the state-sponsored churches, the Anglican Church, under the Constitution, was the first one to start dissolving. But under the Articles of Confederation, it was the first one growing. Because the majority of the people that fought in the Revolutionary War, you know, that was getting the land in Ohio, the new state of Ohio would have became an Anglican state. Because as the states were going to join, the Articles of Confederation and the Northwest Ordinance was going to basically demand that theocracies be extended into these new states. They wanted to make sure a Bible, if a state's going to have a Bible, it's going to be one Bible. And what Bible is that going to be? Well, the majority of the people living in that state are going to say, well, we want to be Anglican. Because why? They came from Anglican states, and they were Anglican. They were, you know, the Episcopal or Anglican faith. So anyway, the way the Articles of Confederation, would have actually, had they started complying with it and had made a success out of it, then, I mean, America was doomed. It was going down. It was going to go down the wrong path of basically duplicating the same crap that was happening in Europe. So, I mean, we would just be a century ahead of them, because by 1790, with the French Revolution, they actually started attacking churches and faiths in Europe. Because, I mean, who was the first people's heads in the guillotines? It was the church leaders and the monarchs, because they were considered synonymous. They were all in league with each other. Off with their heads. So, anyway. All right, so the next one.
Number 14. Oh, no, number 13. That all imposts and duties laid by Congress shall be placed to the credit of the state in which the same shall be collected, and be deducted out of such state's quota of common or general expenses of government.
So, in other words, they wanted this level of protection so that they didn't have to fully pay their tax, basically. So that the states that actually paid would get credited back, so the federal government would have to increase its taxes. So, to me, I see these types of things and I go, it's an interesting play, because nobody wants to really pay the full bill, right? When the bill comes, nobody really wants to pay. So I don't know. So there's people that go out to eat and they just don't even question. They're just, they have integrity. They, this is what we ordered. But there are the people that realize, you know what? This dish wasn't that good, and they start doing that. And it's kind of too late by that point. You should have complained when the dish came, right? But they try to get out of having to pay the full bill. And so it's unfortunate, but I think that's what we're kind of looking at when saying that all imposts and duties laid by Congress shall be placed to the credit of the state in which the same to be collected. So, in other words, basically, as the other states pay and so forth, for the federal government to get their full tax that they need, they have to either get the full payment and not a credit, or they have to raise their taxes more and more. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
So, 14, go ahead.
That every man hath the right to petition the legislature for the redress of grievances in a peaceable and orderly manner.
Okay, so does anything really stand out about this right here? Anything, understanding what we read in
the
section,
First Amendment.
But when we read the First Amendment, that section of the First Amendment that talks about this, what's very unique about the language here that kind of gets reduced in the interest of brevity? Remember, they kind of reduce the language. What really kind of falls out that? Read quickly. Do you got the First Amendment? I'll read the First Amendment. I got it over here, so I'll pull it up. You know what? I'm not even sharing the screen, so you can't even see. So I'll do that, and then there we go, and I'll pull it up, and there we go. So the First Amendment, in getting to it right there, is this. Yeah, I got to do this. That I can see it. Sorry about that. Okay, so the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for the redress of grievances. In other words, actually, let me go ahead of this. Prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or abridging the freedom of press, or abridging the right of the people. Guess that abridging is including all these things that follow, because there's this, these separations of things, or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So what are we missing that they stated specifically that got lost due to brevity? Petition whom in this amendment?
Oh, the legislature.
There you go. So they understood when they said their government, they understood what that meant. Congress knew that meant the legislature, because we're Republican in form. So today, do you think that they did anybody a favor by actually laying out and just saying, petitioning their government? Hey, that could be the court. Yeah, we're going to interpret that as the court. Now you petition the court for your redress of grievances, right? You know anybody that just has a, you know, there are plenty of people in the Patriot movement that believe that that's where redress is found. The reality is everybody understood, and they wanted to be specific, to petition the legislature. So when they got all of these different amendments that kind of came in from all the different states, they consolidated them and they made them as concise as possible, using the, you know, a more brief way of stating what was understood at the time as their government. Their legislature is their government. We're going to get into the ratification debates, folks, and when we hit Virginia, you're going to find, and probably in some of the other ratification debates, you'll find that the view of the common knowledge, or the view of the people of the time, was that the sovereigns were the legislatures. We kind of already proved this in the commission, because they threw out there how two states even considered themselves the highest courts of the state. The state legislatures are the highest court. They're the ones that create the law. They're the ones that create taxation. The court can't do those things. The court only resolves controversies between one party and another. Hopefully this is making sense. Because the court serves a function, but we in common law, it's only a function of justice to basically determine which party was harmed, if there was any harm done. But when it comes to actually redress of grievances with government, the court is not the place. In other words, the court becomes the party you're petitioning. And you're empowering them power that they're not supposed to have. Hopefully, does that make sense, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Because, and correct me if I'm wrong. The legislature has authority over the executive in that they can impeach them and remove them from office.
And the same with the court.
Judicial,
yes,
correct?
The same with the court. The legislature has the oversight authority over both the executive and the courts. Yes, they are the sovereigns of your state. They're the sovereigns of your county. They are the sovereigns of the federal or the general government. Yes. 15. So you're not wrong. You are right. Go ahead. 15.
15. That it be declared that all persons entrusted with the legislative or executive powers of government are the trustees and servants of the public, and as such accountable for their conduct. Wherefore, whenever the ends of government are perverted and the public liberty manifestly endangered, and all other means of redress are ineffectual, the people may, and of right, ought to reform the old or establish a new government. The doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive of the good and happiness of mankind.
Okay. So that right there is basically a reassertion of, and I guess the best way to put it, is ensuring that everybody understands that, you know, hanging over everybody's head is the right of the people to basically alter and or change their government, abolish their government, alter it, or change it. Right? That's what they just said.
Right.
That is a fundamental tenet that was embraced throughout. And so, unfortunately, this is one of the things that actually didn't... didn't get into the Bill of Rights. I have no problem. I think that language right there needs to be read by people so that they understand that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, that when the Constitution becomes the problem, then we have a right to abolish, alter, change it, or what have you. And when we look at it today, is the Constitution our problem?
No, sir.
Is our government our problem?
No, not the government in general. It's the usurpers of the authority that are within our government.
So what is our government?
Not sure what you mean.
Okay, so our government is a bunch of land. Is that our government?
No, absolutely not. Our government is the collective will of the people.
But that's existential. I probably mispronounced that. What is, every time we have an election, we move forward with our government. What is that?
Administration. I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Read the first part of this amendment again, and then tell me.
Okay. That it be declared that all persons entrusted with legislative or executive powers of government are trustees and servants of the public, and as such, accountable for their conduct.
There you go. When we talk about our government are the people. The people we've elected to sit in positions, and their positions are tied to very specific things that they have powers to do. Legislative and executive. Notice what part, what branch of government was not listed in this amendment.
The judicial.
There you go. Now you're starting to see the judiciary is really a perfunctory branch. It's not that important. It's just over there making sure that justice is being served when there's these controversies. But they didn't imagine that there'd be a lot of controversies. I mean, Madison said 90% of all controversies would be dealt with at the state level. And that's in the ratification base. We'll get to that. But anyway, so I'm trying to impress upon you that our government is not, you know, the office of the president. It is the person sitting in that that has been sworn to perform those very specific duties and is now legally under oath to do that. So we actually have a living government that is bound legally to very specific things. They don't have the general powers or arbitrary powers to decide whatever they want, which is why the last part of this clause, or the last part of this amendment, which is like, shoot, 3+ lines, is literally laying out, when you go across the line, we want you to know we have a right to basically remove you, abolish our government, and change it when you go beyond those powers. Now, the reality is the Constitution's not the problem, so we don't need to abolish the Constitution. We have to be able to abolish, but at this point in time, they didn't have a mechanism. And today, when we look at the Constitution, is there a resource in the Constitution that allows us to abolish our government?
Yes.
Yes. 14th Amendment. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. You're absolutely correct. See how divine the providence is, what they were given and how they didn't realize what they didn't have. They just left it in the hands of the people. And that was a dangerous option, because if the people actually got upset and you had a tyrant like Napoleon, and, you know, sitting out there in the winds to basically come in and seize the passion of the people and to take us down a completely wrong path and a different path, the people, by the time people realize what they've done and where they are, it'd be too late. But only he knew, you know, the course. I like to tell people, because my mom had this little, my mother had this little card on her freezer when I grew up, and it basically was very simple. It said, only God knows how many apples are in a seed. God knew what he put in this Constitution, what it would do, and the fruit that it would bear, and what it would need later on, so that it could serve us in these days. I'm Jared Mobley. We Reclaim the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description version of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.